Broadcasting live from the Orange County Convention Center in Orlando, Florida, for HIMSS 19, it's This Just In. Now here's your host, HIT advisor Justin Barnes.
So first of all, Dr. Jamie Skipper.
Yeah.
So you are obviously a longtime friend from Capitol Hill.
Absolutely.
And you are the CEO of Evolution.
Elevation
Health Strategies. Sorry,
yes.
It's right here. And
Elevation
then your former senior. Did I get this title right? Former senior scientist, ONC.
Yeah.
It works.
Good enough.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then you're also senior scientist for EMI Advisors.
Yes.
Okay. Good.
I am their chief scientist. We play
chief scientist. That's what it was. Yes.
Yes. Chief.
Okay.
Yeah.
I love that title. Chief scientist. I kind of like that.
It's great.
And then Evelyn Gallego, from you are the CEO of EMI Advisors.
Correct.
But then also, I love the title. Switch it over one more. Switch it per her title up there. Switch the slides. Where did HS Interoperable Care Planning and Social Determinants of Health Lead. I like that one more. So what's really cool, first of all, welcome to the show. Your first time on the show. Thank you very much.
Yes, thanks for having me.
For being here. Mm-hmm. But literally, five guests, including one of I talked to Karen DeSalvo Friday, I think it was, and she brought up this space very heavily that she's also very engaged in. And then literally five guests from the stage today brought up social determinants of health. And I'm like, I've got Evelyn Gallego coming up later on at 4:40. So I think, 4:40 is perfect. Yes.
Okay.
So I was very excited to have you here.
Excellent. So, excellent. Lots to talk about.
So we'll start off with you, Jamie, though, because we have a nice, actually have a 20-minute segment, so we have a little bit of extra time.
Absolutely.
But I would love for you to give a little bit of background, obviously, on what you're doing now, and then obviously introduce why Evelyn was such a great guest for you, because actually it was your relationship that you brought Evelyn on, so I'd love for you to talk about that for a moment,
too. Sure, I guess for me it's going to be a bit of a shameless plug in terms of what Elevation is all about.
Cool.
And then I'll touch on why.
Well, the reason why I don't mind is you, Jamie, you are so amazing. For all the think tanks, you've been so great and supportive and so helpful. And she, like, helps the glue to keep it together for everything that we do. Yeah. So, by all means, shameless plug away.
On top of talking about Elevation, it's kind of cool to talk about why Evelyn is here, not only because she's, you know, leading a lot of the SDOH, the social determinants of data work, but our partnership has been really tremendous, and it's almost a lesson in how government regulations work. In that, Elevation is a commercial-facing consulting company working with commercial health IT developers. And what we're doing is we're working with folks to help them align their business models and their product designs to the regulatory landscape. Our partnership with EMI allows us to be really in tune with what's going on in the government sector so that we can then bring that to our commercial clients. What's cool in the reciprocal and the hat that I wear at EMI is that a lot of the times I was a government, you know, a govvy myself, it's really important to understand what's happening in the commercial space because you want the regulations to fit what their needs are. And so, you know, that partnership between us allows Elevation to bring that expertise to what EMI is doing with the government sector.
That's excellent. So, talk a little bit about, now you're helping, and actually this is a brilliant strategy because actually I do a little bit of this on my own, but you're helping some private equity funds and firms like that understand the importance of policy, how to engage it, and just be respectful of it, and then also succeed with it.
I mean, yeah, absolutely. I think a lot of times, you know, folks that are coming into the health tech space, there's a lot of folks that come directly from the tech space. And they think, well, we can really make technology do anything. And we talk about this in policy all the time. You know, a lot of times when we want to have data flow in one way or another, it's not a technology problem, right? It's a lot of times it's a culture problem, it's a policy problem. And so when folks are trying to design their tech and they don't understand what the regulatory framework is, then they either create tech that doesn't meet the needs or they create tech that doesn't set them up to create the right revenue streams that keep them successful. And we're here to help them with that by making sure that it aligns with what the regulations are as well as what's emerging.
Fantastic. No, I love it. It was something that I've done throughout my 20 years in health IT is being able to, you know, successfully navigate regulation or create regulation where we needed it, mm-hmm. would benefit the industry and certainly care providers, but then also how to implement it successfully and then do kind of the full service and the life cycle of it. And then how do we make it better? You know, I remember doing, regulatory corrections, but there's actually a term when you have to fix a regulation. You come back and work with HHS to correct or work with the regulator to correct it. I forget the exact term, but anyhow, the full life cycle of policy.
Yeah, there is a life cycle, and I think folks don't on the entrepreneurial side don't always understand that cycle, especially even now. It's really important for folks to know that what ONC and CMS dropped yesterday mm-hmm. are NPRMs, which right. means they are draft rules.
Right.
And a lot of folks are freaking out, and they shouldn't yet.
Right.
It tells you where we're going, but they're not the final rules.
Right.
Yeah.
Actually, Elise Sweeney Anthony was on the show at 3:50 today talking about the new rule.
Excellent.
So it was awesome, and she did a great job. I'd never met her before, but she was fantastic.
She's great.
She described it in a very simple fashion, and the new infographic they published was pretty cool because I didn't have time to read the rule before I came on air, but I did go through the infographic. So I'm very happy. But introduce Evelyn and why you feel Evelyn was such a great guest for today's show.
So, as you said before, everyone is talking about social determinants of health data. And what's really key about that is that, for me personally, you know, I've always wanted to see folks look at the full picture of the patient, not just snippets of when they are coming to the physician once or twice a year. You know, that's just a tiny fraction of what's happening to that patient. So if you really want to, and my hat has always been patient outcomes, and I've been a nerd on the research side, right? And you've known that. And so you can't really understand the whole picture of the patient unless you start bringing in this SDOH data. And so now that Evelyn is really kind of having the opportunity to lead that sphere, she's had a passion for this for so long, and now, you know, all the stars are aligning and opportunities are coming into place. And she's the person for the job, and mm-hmm. it's just really awesome to have her here.
Cool. So, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank
but then
you.
Also, so for everybody, because I didn't really know social determinants of health until you kind of educated me, both of you, a couple weeks ago. I really didn't. I mean, I understood the concept. I knew mm-hmm. it was out there, but I didn't understand the details, and I certainly do understand the importance. But give my audience an understanding of what social determinants of health is.
Sure, and it's been a hot topic at the conference. So first, I like to always state that social determinants of health are neither positive or negative. They're really just factors, the way we are, right? Where we live, where we work, what our education levels. But when you start, when you don't address them, especially around social risk and social mm-hmm. need, then it has a sincere impact on your overall health. And just like Jamie said, social determinants of health inform whole person care, and there's growing evidence around not only informing the integrating across the care continuum, but really showing impactful outcomes on health, but also lowering costs. So there's much interest in that for that reason, and I think we definitely need to shift from just focusing on acute episodic care to focusing on what are the things that make us healthy, make us happy, and make us well overall.
So what healthcare or health IT trends are you seeing in the industry regarding this? And
there's so many. It's exciting because you know, usually when you start a project, it's like, what's the business case for this? Why should we care? And you're seeing interventions from the payers, both public and private, employers, that are actually investing in addressing these social risk mm-hmm. issues. And they're identifying interventions such as, you know, we have plans paying for air filtration or clean, you know, I think that's amazing. Instead of saying, I'm going to give you a clinical intervention,
right.
I'm going to pay for you to have a healthy living environment at home so you do not come into the ER, right? So you're seeing this is growing every day. I hear of new interventions, and we call them non-clinical interventions, but they're being led by the healthcare industry. Versus on the community side, many of these interventions do exist. You know, on the many Medicaid services and programs run around this, but you're first time you're seeing this big shift on the clinical side.
Well, yeah, and I don't know if this is an exact example or not, but I remember 10 years ago when we first started tackling a lot of accountable care and ACOs, and then one of the ACOs out in Washington State or Oregon, part of their model was to buy air conditioning units for the stroke victims. There was in the summertime, they're having strokes. It wasn't because of anything else health-wise, it's that they're overheated.
It's like common sense.
Yes, right. Exactly. And I was like, I just loved it. I'm like, that's, now we're starting to tackle healthcare in a much better way. It's not another pill. Don't give them, you know,
yes,
that's what
it's
we
not,
just
it's not
push pills on them. It's not about that. That's fantastic. So what are you seeing, Jen, Jamie, for trends?
One of the things, so my focus is a bit different, but what I'm seeing is that there are a lot of folks in the entrepreneurial world realizing how, if they want to grow their health tech companies and they want to be successful, they have to align with the regulatory frameworks that are coming out.
Very much so.
And so it's exciting to see that starting to emerge. And what I'm seeing is that folks are often trying to figure out how to do it within their business models. And so we're trying to work with them to figure out what the right way is. But I think that that's exciting because then folks both on the, you know, on the specific startup, in terms of the individual entrepreneur versus the larger investor groups, they're all looking at it, you know, across the spectrum. So that's finally really exciting because over the last number of years being at ONC, you'd have folks saying, we figured it out. We know how to disrupt healthcare. And they're realizing, they're starting to realize that disrupting healthcare doesn't exactly work the way that they thought it was going to work.
Right. Nope. I agree. So now, on the social determinants of health, what innovations are you seeing in the marketplace regarding using SDH data in care delivery?
So there's, so right now there's this large and evident interest from healthcare systems of wanting to use their EHRs to document social determinants of health or social risk. So you're seeing a lot of programs around how can we integrate these screening tools and be able to document and track and monitor care for that individual and actually start demonstrating lower costs. So what I'd say the trends are really on being innovative, on updating their systems, on being able to integrate that data across different clinical and non-clinical systems. The challenge, however, is that the data itself, right now, there is no common definition.
Yeah, I'm about to say, I wouldn't know how to put that inside a system.
No, so it's great, like everyone's on this, but they're like, we can, those that have been successful using their existing data infrastructure, it's because they're already interconnected, and they've determined what codes they need to use, and they set their own policies internal. But then when it comes to, as we look at the landscape of where we're moving towards, and of course the rules were really evident that we have to move towards, we have to really shift to using interoperable data systems, you know, that's where they're stuck. And they're stuck because they don't have these common definitions. So one of the near-term opportunities,
The Siren Project,
I have to put a plug for that because it is based on these trends.
What does it stand for? What's Siren?
So Siren is the Social Interventions Research and Evaluation Network out of University of California in San Francisco. And they're an academic institution that has focused for the last 3 years on studying, researching, gathering evidence around social and medical care integration. And part of their work was, you know, investigating how can we help health systems document this so we can actually do, you know, that's the part where the data aggregation, like how can we use this data to actually inform better care, identify better programs, and not leave it to the community-based setting.
Yeah.
So we're going to stand up a project soon on actually identifying what those common definitions need to be and work with industry, bringing them together, because these things don't happen in silo. So this is the case where the codes that exist in the market right now, no one knows how to use them. No one knows which ones to use because they were developed in silo and not with broad stakeholder and I would say broad stakeholder engagement, like an ability for them to participate. So that's, we always say the starting part whenever you create any standards work to support interoperability, start with multi-stakeholder groups and ensure that you are defining things the same way, and therefore you will make them more usable.
Very true.
In the long term.
And I would add to that that the key on that is adoption, right?
Yeah.
So it's not that one standard is better than the other. It's that when you have a large community of stakeholders coming together and you have a majority at the table, then you already have a large adoption, which makes the adoption across the stakeholders that even might not be at the table much higher. And that's what we've seen with FHIR. You know, FHIR has really taken off over the last number of years, not because it's the best standard in the world. I'm not saying it's bad.
But
it was really great because finally a lot of key people came together and said, we have to figure this out and do something. And that something then got developed, and now FHIR is as mature as it is now because so many people came together, and now it's being adopted a lot.
So you mentioned one, SIREN being a best practice. What other, what are a couple of the best practices to engage this and this trend around social determinants of health and so forth? What else would you share with my audience?
Well, we have, I would say there's the opportunity to convene across across the broad stakeholder groups, but having a platform that supports the ability for individuals to voice or organizations or entities that care about this to actually contribute to the work. But I think as we move forward, definitely there's, the SIREN work, we say it's a seed, right? It's a starting point. And we, just Jamie mentioned FHIR, which is an HL7, very popular at this conference.
Anish was my second guest today. FHIR every year.
FHIR.
He's always on FHIR, yes.
Yes. And CMS is on FHIR. So
we
see this being, we will stand this up as an HL7 project. So it have a clear linkage to Karen, that Anisha's project, Argonaut, and DaVinci, right? So these are projects that, DaVinci very much focus on FHIR to support value-based payment, addressing whole person care and being able to capture the data across different settings. SDOH fits in nicely there. So you're going to see, that's, and those are also multi-stakeholder communities, right? So I think this all builds, so you see that trend. It's not, you can no longer build or develop things in silo. You must engage a broader community. As Jamie said, definitely on adoption, because if folks don't feel they have their voice being heard and what actually ends up being developed, and eventually this is a starting point, the U.S., so if Elise talked about U.S. CDI, SDOH is a proposed data class, so definitely the trend, there is a regulatory trend that way, and if we're defining it here, so by the time it gets into, regulation or proposed regulation, you've had strong industry, what FHIR's model's been, right?
Exactly. No, that's excellent. Mm-hmm. So in my closing minute or so, a couple minutes, each of you, kind of a lightning round, thinking 3 years out, because we talk about here and now, and you are on the cutting edge of what's coming too with social determinants of health. I guess you call it SDOH. But I'll start off with you, Jamie. What do you see coming down that we have to think about in 2022 that we just be ready for?
So from the entrepreneurial world, I think folks are trying to understand how to create the right patient-facing applications that will allow them to be more empowered to use their data and be engaged with their care, and how those pieces will fit into the new value-based care world. There's going to be an interesting development, or it's going to just be interesting to watch over the next year or two to see what the big regs that Jeff talked about are going to affect all of the pieces that these folks are developing. So I think that that's going to be really interesting. I think it's going to get a little chaotic first before it gets better.
I would agree with that completely. What are your thoughts on trends to look forward in 3 years from now?
Oh, so I mentioned USCDI from a regulatory perspective, payment reform. So definitely you're going to have both private and public payers. And we're seeing that, you know, CMS announced that they were looking at incorporating housing services, paying for housing services under Medicare.
Right.
You know, so that's, Secretary Azar mentioned having payment model under CMMI focused on integrating social determinants of health. So I think you're going to have many more payment programs around that. From the vendor, like innovation, you need more technologies available that can aggregate this data and make it useful and impactful. So I think trends around being able to incorporate this data from multiple sources and readily visualize it to inform decision making, I think that's definitely what we should be seeing in the horizon.
I think if there was a term that people need to really think about, it's actionable data, both for patients and for
providers.
That's
how I opened my show. You listen to this, you get actionable intelligence. I call it actionable intelligence, but
that's
actionable data. I love it.
Yes.
Very
cool. I would say also innovative. We talk about innovative interventions and innovative financing, because you're going to be funding things differently.
Yes, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. That's excellent. Yeah, and we have, I guess, one of the themes from today that has emerged, and you mentioned it just a moment ago, is you got to look at a health system. They're talking about health systems not really even being, we got to think about integrating into the larger ecosystem, mm-hmm. and health systems not even being territorial anymore, and specifically, Thomas Jefferson University and Jeff Health out of Philadelphia brought this up. They said, we aren't thinking that our backyard is going to be our backyard in 3 years. We're looking for health applications for America. We're looking to solve things, with IoT and the way we can engage patients in virtual care. There's no reason they have to just be in Philadelphia. They can be in California. They can be in Japan. We can just be a global healthcare provider. And it's like that. I see the walls of health systems coming down. That feeds a lot of what we're talking about as well.
Absolutely.
You talk about social determinants of health, but then you're bringing in other global citizens, global communities.
Right.
I mean, that's just, yeah, so... pretty interesting. You think about
very
years
exciting.
Out. My next guest is Ligia. Ligia. How do you say your last name?
Ricardi.
Ligia Ricardi. Excellent, because if she's not here, we can keep going, because she's my 5 o'clock guest, and she's not here, and we can just wrap it up.
I hope she comes, because she is amazing.
I know she is.
Having her on.
She's never been on my radio show before, but she was my 5 o'clock guest. But let me see here. What do you guys have planned for the rest of HIMSS? What are your big goals? Start off with you, Jamie, the next couple of days.
So I'm really excited to kind of be a fly on the wall at Venture Connect tomorrow.
That's what Howard, my other guest, just before this. He's one of the founders of Venture Connect, and that's what he said. I want to go in and listen.
It's been interesting to see how after HIMSS has kind of taken up Health 2.0, to see that merging here. You asked Jeff earlier, what are the new pockets of folks that HIMSS have taken on as a community? And it's been really exciting to see the health developer and entrepreneurial world be part of the HIMSS mix. You know, and so tomorrow I'm going to be interested in watching that. It'll be my first time. But for our new company, it's interesting to see what that genre is talking about now.
And I think there are 8 companies pitching and 750.
It's a Shark Tank, really.
750 attendees,
an
all-day
Shark Tank, Yeah, it'll be fun.
It's cool.
Yeah.
What about you the next couple of days?
No, I just wanted to, when you said about new folks being here, kudos to Lyft. Like, you've got the transportation sharing apps here. I think that definitely
That's right, they're partnership with Allscripts, right?
Yeah, so I think that's incredible. I'm here to pitch my work with Sirens.
How do we engage Siren?
We would open it up as an HL7 project. So mm-hmm. we will announce it and invite folks to sign up. And it will be led by my firm, EMI Advisors, under HL7. So Siren is the main sponsor, and they'll carry it through.
Is Chuck Jaffe still there?
Chuck is the CEO,
Okay.
Yes.
I've known him for probably 20 years now.
Yeah.
Cool.
We want to invite it. So part of it is, just announcing it, making sure folks know if they are interested in social determinants of health, Come see
S-D-O-H.
Me. Yeah, S-D-O-H. Actually, Siren calls it S-D-H. So that's also, I'm like, yeah. Semantics are important here if we're going to shorten words.
Well, it has S-D-H in my notes.
Yes.
Rather than use it S-D-O-H.
Because Hymns calls it S-D-O-H.
Gotcha. And now we speak to who you're, you know, make sure they can understand what you're saying at the Hymns conference at S-D-O-H.
Hymns, I said, they call it S-D-H. So, yes, I'm also excited to hear more about, you know, technologies. Many are integrating S-D-O-H data.
Yep. And I'm happy to see Lyft as well, because when I was trying to come here, I was going to the airport on Monday morning, Uber didn't show up. I almost missed my flight because I always go plenty of time.
Yeah.
Uber just didn't show up. I kept on switching drivers, and it was 10 minutes out, 15 minutes out. I called Lyft, they're there in 6 minutes. So I'm going to give Lyft a plug. I'm glad you brought it up, because actually I was so upset. Monday morning, I'm like, I got to get to the airport. So anyhow. Well, anything else that you guys want to mention since we're here live on air? And I'm gonna wrap it up because we'll be out of time here. And I hate to miss her, but something might have happened with her schedule.
Yeah.
But anything else you want to?
I think that in the kind of world of looking at the regs that are coming out and folks looking at the whole patient data, I really want to go back to my kind of foundation of my passions, which is patient outcomes and the research aspect of it. That's going to still be really important. So when we're talking about SDOH, for me, I'm excited because now we can do research and we can ask questions that really answer the entirety of the question and not just a snippet. So I think that I really want to put a plug into maybe an old term. People get excited and then get waned out about buzzwords, but I think that people need to remember that it's all about patient outcomes, and not just in terms of what the hospital or the hospitalist or the provider wants, but what the patient wants is their outcomes. And I think that as we use more data, it's going to be really exciting on how we can get there.
It's excellent. You actually made me think of when you talk about regs and I thought you were going on the commenting track, as Elise brought up, and I do want to bring this again to my listeners. Do go out there, look at these rules, make your comments, but also it's important to say what you like about the rules, what you don't like about the rule.
Yes,
and that's
absolutely.
Something we've been trying to educate people on, because we always go out there, we'll complain all day long. But what do you like? You must like something here. Oh, yeah, we like all these 10 points. Well, tell us that, please, because then the rule does not get changed too much in the wrong direction.
Absolutely.
So that's one thing you made me think of there.
That's true.
Anything in closing that you want to bring up?
I'd say whatever, as Jamie alluded to, I'm an advocate for person-centered care.
Yes.
So anything, you know, even if we're talking about social determinants and if social risk has those negative, you know, people think they're negative, but really it's really about making sure that the individual, the person is at heart and all their needs and preferences are addressed by all their care providers. So I think it's really around something that we need to shift from patient at the center to person centeredness, because 99% of our lifetime we are people, and maybe 1% we are a patient.
That stat has come up twice today. I love
it.
It's a great stat. Fantastic.
Okay.
Well, Jamie, Evelyn, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Great to have you on the show. Thank you for returning, Jamie, and thank you for all your help in the think tank as well. And we'll see you guys also in the morning.
Early morning.
Yes. I am so sorry. I know. It's the only time that would work for everybody's schedule.
It's okay. Thank you so much.
Thank you, ladies. I truly appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you.
And thank you to everybody for listening. Just want to say thanks also to my partners, Business Radio X, Stone and Lee. We had a great day, guys. Thank you very much. My voice is about to give out. So we've done a little over four hours of broadcasting live. So thank you, guys. Gentlemen, you're a true pleasure to always work with. And then Roberta Mullen from Healthcare Now Radio, she was the brainchild of this show 5 years ago. She offered it to me, and so I took it. And many thanks to, obviously, Lenovo Health for hosting us, Intel Health for always supporting us, and HIMSS organization. This show would not be possible without all of them. And certainly tune in weekdays at 11:30 a.m. Pacific, 2:30 p.m. Eastern to hear our latest shows. You can always track me on Twitter at HIT Advisor and use the hashtag ThisJustinRadio so we can respond to your comments from the show. And always, you can catch all my episodes posted on iTunes, SoundCloud, iHeartRadio, Spreaker, Google Play, and TuneIn.